He had previously married a Jewess of good birth named Doris, who bore him a son Antipater. Now he wedded the daughter of Alexander, the son of Aristobulus, and granddaughter of Hyrcanus, Mariamne, so becoming a connection of the king. When at Philippi Cassius had met his end, Caesar went back to Italy, Antony to Asia. Numerous cities sent deputations to Antony in Bithynia, and with them came influential Jews to accuse Pharsalia and Herod of obtaining control of affairs by force and leaving Hyrcanus a mere figurehead. To counter this propaganda, Herod appeared on the scene, and coaxing Antony with huge bribes, so worked upon him that he would not let Herod's enemies say a word. Thus, for the time being, they were silenced. But later on, 100 Jewish officials arrived at Daphne, near Antioch, to appeal to Antony, now a slave to his passion for Cleopatra. They put forward the most highly esteemed and eloquent men among them to accuse the two brothers. Messala replied for the defense, backed by Hyrcanus because of the marriage connection. Antony listened to both sides, and then asked Hyrcanus which party was the more fit to govern. When Hyrcanus recommended Herod and his associates, Antony was delighted. Years before, he had been the guest of Herod's father, who had given him a right royal welcome when Gabinius and he were invading Judea. So he appointed the two brothers tetrarchs, with the task of administering all Judea. The delegates exploded with fury, and Antony arrested 15 and locked them up, with the fixed intention of putting them to death. The rest he sent packing with a flea in their ear. The result was greater turmoil in Jerusalem. A second delegation, 1,000 strong, was sent to Tyre, where Antony was resting on his way to Jerusalem. His reply to their clamor was to send out the governor of Tyre with instructions to execute all he could catch and to back up the authority of the man he had appointed tetrarchs. This procedure was forestalled by Herod, who went on to the beach with Hyrcanus and strongly advised them not to bring about their own destruction and land their country in war by senseless strife. This made them more furious still. So Antony dispatched a body of infantry, who killed or wounded many of them. Hyrcanus saw to it that the dead were buried, and the wounded cared for. Even so, the survivors would not keep quiet, but created such disorder in the city that Antony was actually goaded into executing the prisoners. 2 years later, Barzaphanes, the Parthian satrap, serving under Pacorus, the king's son, seized Syria. Lysanias, who had succeeded his late father, Ptolemy, son of Menaeus, by promising 1,000 talents and 500 women, persuaded the satrap to bring back Antigonus and make him king, dethroning Hyrcanus. Pacorus accepted the bribe, and choosing the coastal route for himself, instructed Barzaphanes to drive through the interior. Of the seaside towns, Tyre would not admit Pacorus, though Ptolemais and Sidon did so. Then to one of the royal cupbearers, who had the same name as himself, he entrusted a detachment of cavalry, ordering him to gallop on into Judea, to reconnoiter the enemy position and give all necessary aid to Antigonus. While the troopers plundered Carmel, Jews flocked to Antigonus's standard, eager to take part in the invasion. He sent them ahead to seize a position called the Oaks. Here they clashed with the enemy, drove them back, and chased them helter-skelter to Jerusalem, and having attracted strong support, advanced to the palace. Hyrcanus and Pharsalia met them with a powerful force, and battle raged in the marketplace. Routing the enemy, Herod's forces herded them into the temple, and to keep watch on them posted 60 men in the houses nearby. These guards, the party opposed to the brothers, assailed and burnt to death. Herod, furious at their destruction, attacked and killed many of the citizens, and day after day they sallied out against each other in small groups, and bloodshed continued without pause. Now came the Feast of Pentecost, and all the vicinity of the temple, in fact the whole city, was filled with people from the countryside, most of them armed. Phasael was guarding the wall, Herod with a handful of men, the palace. The latter sallied out against the disordered enemy in the northern suburb, inflicted very heavy casualties, routed them all, and herded some into the city, some into the temple, and others into the entrenched camp outside. At this stage, Antigonus requested the admission of Pacorus as mediator, and Phasael agreed to open the gates to the Parthian with an escort of 500 horse, and made him welcome. Pacorus had come avowedly to end the strife, but in reality to assist Antigonus. He cunningly persuaded Phasael to go and discuss with Barzapharnes means of re-establishing peace. Though Herod did his best to dissuade him and urged him to kill the schemer, not walk into his trap, one should never trust a foreigner's word. Phasael went, taking Hyrcanus with him. Pacorus, to silence suspicion, left with Herod some of the so-called yeoman cavalry, and with the rest escorted Phasael. On reaching Galilee, they found the inhabitants in a state of armed revolt. They had an interview with the satrap, a very subtle rogue who wrapped up his scheming in friendly protestations. He bestowed gifts on them, and then, as they departed, set a trap for them. The nature of the plot dawned on them when they arrived at one of the seaside towns called Ecdipon. There they heard of the promised 1,000 talents and how most of the 500 women dedicated by Antigonus to Parthian use were of their own race, how they themselves were spied on by the foreign troops every night and would have been kidnapped long ago if they had not been waiting to seize Herod in Jerusalem first before news of what had happened to them put him on the lookout. This was no longer just a rumor. They could now see sentries not far away. But though Ophelius, who had learnt every detail of the plot from Saramalla, the richest Syrian of his generation, did his best to persuade Phasael to make his escape, nothing could induce him to desert Hyrcanus. He went straight to the satrap and told him plainly what he thought of the plot, and especially of his sinking so low for the sake of money. Moreover, he himself was prepared to pay more for his life than Antigonus for his crown. The Parthian made a cunning and plausible reply, denying the suspicions on oath, and then went to Pacorus. In accordance with his orders, some of the Parthians left behind at once kidnapped Phasael and Hyrcanus, who cursed them bitterly for their perjury and broken faith. Meanwhile, the cupbearer, who had been sent to kidnap Herod, was trying to carry out the plot by enticing him outside the walls, as instructed. He, however, had from the beginning suspected the invaders, and learning now that a letter notifying him of the plot had fallen into enemy hands, he refused to go outside, though Pacorus argued most convincingly that he ought to meet the bearers of the dispatch, which had not come into the enemy's possession, and made no reference to a plot, but merely recorded Phasael's doing. But as it happened, Herod had previously learned from another informant that his brother had been kidnapped, and he was visited by Hyrcanus's daughter Mariamne, the shrewdest of women, who implored him not to go outside or trust himself to the foreigners, now openly trying to bring him down. Pacorus and his staff were still seeking some crooked means of carrying out their scheme, it being impossible to get the better openly of a man so alert, when Herod forestalled them by setting out at night with those to whom he was most attached, in the hope of reaching Idumea undetected. The Parthians, learning what had happened, went in pursuit. Herod made his mother and sisters, the girl he had promised to marry, with her mother and the youngest of his brothers, go straight on, while he and his servants protected them by vigorous rear-guard actions. Every time he attacked the enemy, he inflicted heavy casualties, finally making a dash for Masada. In his flight, he had less trouble with the Parthians than with the Jews, who harried him all the way, and 7 miles from the city began a pitched battle which lasted quite a long time and ended in their utter defeat. Here, later on, Herod commemorated his victory by building a city graced with a palace on which no expense was spared, and defended by a citadel of enormous strength. This city he called after himself Herodium. For the rest of his flight he was daily joined by large numbers, and at Thressa in Idumea his brother Joseph met him and advised him to disburden himself of most of his followers, as Masada could never hold so big a number, over 9,000. Herod agreed, and sent those who were of no use to him to various parts of Idumea, providing them with food for their journey, then, keeping the toughest fighters as well as his family and close friends, he arrived safely at the fortress, leaving 800 men there to protect the women, with provisions sufficient for a siege. He hurried on to Petra in Arabia. The Parthians in Jerusalem turned to looting, breaking into the houses of those who had fled and into the palace, and sparing only Hyrcanus's money, which did not exceed 300 talents. The total sum found fell short of their expectations, for Herod, long suspicious of Parthian trustworthiness, had already transferred the most valuable of his treasures to Idumea, an example followed by all his friends. The looting finished, the Parthian conduct became so outrageous that they filled the whole country with war to the death, blotted out the city of Marissa, and after making Antigonus king, actually handed over to him Phasael and Hyrcanus in fetters to be tortured. When Hyrcanus fell down at his feet, Antigonus with his own teeth mutilated his ears, that never again in any circumstances might he resume the high priesthood, for a high priest must be physically perfect. But Phasael was too quick for him. He bravely dashed his head against a rock, as he was not free to use sword or hand. Thus he showed himself a true brother of Herod, and Hyrcanus a cowardly poltroon. He died like a hero, crowning his life's work with a fitting end. A rival version of the incident states that he revived after the first shock, but a doctor sent by Antigonus to look after him filled the wound with noxious drugs and finished him off. Whichever version is correct, all honor to him for his attempt. It is said that before he breathed his last, he was told by some woman that Herod had escaped. "Now," he whispered, "I shall die happy, as I am leaving behind me a living man to avenge me." So he did. The Parthians had missed their main target, the women, but put Antigonus at the head of affairs in Jerusalem and carried off Hyrcanus in fetters to Parthia. Herod was driving on farther towards Arabia, thinking his brother was still alive, and anxious to get money from the king, as without it he could not hope to save Phasael by appealing to Parthian cupidity. He reckoned that if the Arab was too forgetful of his friendship with Herod's father, and too close-fisted to make him a gift, he could borrow the ransom from him by leaving in pledge the son of the man to be ransomed, as he had his nephew with him, a boy of 7. He was further prepared to give him 300 talents, putting forward Tyrian intermediaries. But fate had forestalled his earnest efforts. Phasael was dead, and Herod's brotherly affection was of no avail. Nor did he find any friendship now among the Arabs. Their king, Malichus, sent him orders to leave the country forthwith, on the pretext that the Parthians had formally demanded the expulsion of Herod from Arabia. In actual fact, he had made up his mind to keep what he owed Antipater, and not to be shammed into repaying Antipater's generosity by any kindness to his children in their distress. He was abetted in his shameless behavior by men equally anxious to embezzle the money Antipater had deposited with them, the most powerful of his courtiers. Meeting with the hostility of the Arabs for the very reason that had led him to expect their warmest friendship, Herod gave the messengers the answer suggested by his disappointment, and turned back towards Egypt. The first night he bivouacked at one of the country's temples, after picking up the men he had left behind. The next day he went on to Rhino Corura, where the story of his brother's death reached him. Anxiety for what might happen, displaced by grief for what had happened already, he marched straight on. Belatedly regretting his behavior, the Arab king hastily sent messengers to recall the man he had wronged. But Herod had already reached Pelusium, where he was refused a passage by the sailors in the harbor, so appealed to their superiors. They, impressed by his rank and reputation, conducted him to Alexandria. When he entered the city, he received a splendid welcome from Cleopatra, who hoped to employ him as commander in a projected campaign. But he evaded the queen's pressing request, and fearing neither a voyage in midwinter nor the turmoil in Italy, sailed for Rome. In serious danger off Pamphylia, he jettisoned the bulk of the cargo and with difficulty made roads, which had suffered grievously in the war against Cassius. There he was received by his friends Ptolemy and Safinius. Shortage of money did not prevent his having a very large trireme built. In this he sailed with his friends to Brundisium. From there he hurried on to Rome, where he first applied to Antony as the friend of his father, telling him of his own and his family's misfortunes, and how he had had to leave his nearest and dearest besieged in a fortress, while he endured a winter crossing to appeal for his assistance. Antony was very grieved at the change in his fortunes. Recalling Antipater's hospitality, and filled with admiration for the heroic character before him, he decided on the spot that the man he had once made tetrarch should now be king of the Jews. If regard for Herod moved him, dislike of Antigonus moved him just as much. He considered him an agitator and an enemy of Rome. Caesar, Herod found even more ready to help than Antony. The Egyptian campaigns which Antipater had shared with his father were fresh in his mind, as were his hospitality and unshakable loyalty, and he could see Herod's appetite for action. He convened the Senate, to which Messala, supported by Atratinus, introduced Herod, and gave a full account of his father's services and his own loyalty to Rome, at the same time making it clear that Antigonus was their enemy, not only because he had quarreled with them before, but because he had now accepted the crown from the Parthians in defiance of the Romans. These revelations angered the Senate, and when Antony rose to suggest that the Parthian war was an added reason for making Herod king, they all voted in favor. The house adjourned, and Antony and Caesar went out with Herod between them, the consuls and other magistrates leading the way in order to offer sacrifice and to deposit the decree in the capital. This first day of Herod's reign